T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The following program is brought to you by the Preferred Home Team. Content is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal or real estate advisors. Welcome to the Real Estate Radio Hour, a forum of ideas, plans, and expert advice on all things real estate. Andy Prasky with RE/MAX Advantage Plus was named Super Agent by Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine. Chris Rooney of RE/MAX Preferred is a Lakeshore and Luxury Home Specialist. Together, they cover the Twin Cities. This combined dynamic duo has sold over 2,000 homes, ranked in the top 1% nationwide, top 10 in the state of Minnesota, and still have time to get together every Saturday to talk about real estate. Here's Abby Prasky and Chris Rooney, Denny Long, and the Real Estate Radio Hour.
And good morning. Welcome back to this portion of our real estate show around every Saturday here on CCO in the 10 o'clock hour. Chris and Andy, good to see you guys. And I, again, will ask you how your week was in real estate, that is. We'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that, yeah.
Well, yeah, after last week's show talking about the Nisswa market, boy, I had the itch to go start looking for a cabin, I tell you.
I was with you there.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, they were talking to us, you know, I don't know, Chris, if you caught the show, but they, towards the end of the show, they were talking about the different, you know, neat features and how there's actually an economy up there now, and there's all these exciting things going on that are beyond just, you know, sitting on the lake. But what was kind of cool is they were talking about the ability to find the lakes that have, you know, you want to sit on the dock and read the book, or do you want to, you know, water ski off your dock, kind of a, you know, or boat over to a restaurant or a bar. And apparently they have all of that, so, you know.
Well, and that's why you have an agent, too. I mean, because seriously, if I'm going up in that area and I'm thinking I'm getting on a recreational lake and all of a sudden it's the, you know, it's the rowboat lake, that's not going to be a lot of fun. That happens a lot up in Hayward as well.
Yeah, yeah. So we wanted to thank Brent and Mark again. And anybody that wants to get a hold of those guys, you can reach out to the show here or, you know, send us an email. You know, Prasky or andy@prasky.com will come right and I'll make sure that they get your info and get you on one of those cabin searches. But you did ask us a question how the week went.
And
are you going to answer it?
All the way around the barn, and I still haven't answered the question.
Yeah, you have.
No, the week was actually really good. The weather, I think, really made a difference with this nice sunshine.
Oh, I guess.
It has really affected everybody in a good way. You know, the interest rates, Danny, I'm telling you, I'm a little concerned still that the rates have slowed down the momentum. People almost like doing the old let's wait and see if they go back down, kind of a pause.
Yeah.
I don't think they're gone. I don't think the buyers are gone. I think that they're just on pause.
And it's kind of a rate shock, you know, in a way. And I think, I don't care whatever side you're on, you know, politically, the whole election thing, you just don't know. And people are just kind of nervous on what's happening. You know, there's a lot of stats out right now that the market is shifted and, you know, prices have gone down and all of that fun stuff, and people are scared. But I call it, our stat is kind of like boots on the ground stats.
Yeah.
You know, it's what we're seeing every single day and what's happening. And the one thing that I saw, and I don't think it's not kind of followed through yet, but it is. I saw a lot of real good action on the upper bracket end of homes. Now, everyone's saying, oh, they're reducing. Yeah, they are. But this is when people are buying, too. So there's a lot more that are going. We just got rid of one. We're real close on another one, and we've got two appointments on upper $1 million, almost $2 million homes, and that, I don't know. To me, that always signifies something that it's not gone yet, because those people usually don't make those mistakes.
Well, and I've always wondered about so let's say you've got $2 million cash in the bank. Why would you go buy a $2 million pay cash on a house unless you were scared of the other investments that were out there, or maybe you felt uncertain about what's happening? And so the one thing you do know is you do know that you want to live in a beautiful house like that. So it makes sense to you to maybe make that investment. So I do see a lot of that kind of logic going into play. When markets are vulnerable, housing or cabins or things seem to be a great way to, you know, kind of hide away from the marketplace or the vulnerability of a market. But, you know, it's one of those things that you get into how much do you spend versus, you know, like what's interesting to me, I'd love to see the stats on this. Like how many of the houses under 500 are financed versus the houses over 500? And I think it'd be significantly cash heavy on the over 500. And everybody's like, well, how do they afford the payment on a $2 million house? They don't have payments. And it's pretty crazy.
Well, they do have payments when you put taxes and insurance and actually maintaining that place. And
So, you could have $3,000, $4,000 a month just in maintenance and taxes and, you know, somebody mowing the grass and, you know, keeping it looking nice.
That's what I said. I was with a client, and we were talking about, you know, their home that they want to sell. It was a second home. Mm-hmm. They don't owe anything on it. But they said, you know, it's just time to kind of go. We don't spend much time here. And I said, well, what does it cost? I mean, no payments, almost $7,000 a month to run that house.
Wow.
You know, to be able to you think about that. And that's what I think sometimes you start getting into. There's a great example of a house that I've seen that the price just continually went down. I mean, this person had to have about $5.5 million into it. We got it. It went down, 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 down. Mm-hmm. I mean, it ended up selling for $1.5 million. But the reason it did is because once you start getting into those $5 million people, you know, can throw away $7,000-$10,000 a month, no problem,
right,
on maintenance. But the people that are at $1.5 million, this sounds crazy, but I mean.
No, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
I think it's good to talk about. It's interesting.
And so what happened was that house maybe should have sold for $3 million, but those people are like, no, 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 no. And then finally someone grabbed it but it's the maintenance. It was the maintenance.
Chris, it's funny, you know, we just had a client of ours that was looking in the North Metro, and we had up to $1.5 million budget, and we were up there. And so there's a lot of fun stuff to see. A lot of the houses we were looking at were $4 million, previously listed for $4 million, $3 million, $2 million, that now are down to $1 million or $900,000. And these guys and gals that are selling them are just losing their shirts on it. But what's interesting is that the buyer, like you just said, they can afford $1.5 million, looks at it and goes, holy cows, if I paid cash, just the taxes and the heating, like on a 9,000 square foot house, and you have the boiler systems and you have all the water that are amazingly cool systems, you could have a $10,000 nut to crack every month on that house just if you own it free and clear. And to me, that's obviously a different tax bracket than what I'm hanging around with. But
I think the other thing is, too, when we're talking about those level of homes and they start that free falling, mm-hmm, it's typically because they haven't really been updated.
Right.
And it's really hard for these people to imagine, you know, that, hey, I've got to throw in $500,000. To be able to get it to the level so I can go get that price.
To get your money back sometimes right out of it, yeah.
Well, and get it back, but yet if it doesn't, it free falls. And if you're free falling, I mean, it costs you $1.5 million, or hey, let's do $500,000. Mm-hmm. But it's that whole part about convincing them at the beginning that, hey, here's what the market is doing. And by the way, you got to put in about $400,000 to be able to get this, this, and this so we can kind of protect your price.
Yeah, it's
crazy. A lot of people don't like to do that.
Right.
You know, so it just, but there's, sometimes there's just simple little things that you can do to be able to, because you got to get it sold right away. Because if you don't get it sold right away in that bracket, then people start thinking, what's wrong with it? Mm-hmm. There's something that's wrong with it. And then they start making up things. You know, I always do the joke that, hey, we got a beautiful pond in the backyard. Now that becomes a swamp and it floods and your basement is a pool every spring.
And FEMA's involved.
Exactly. Right. And it's just kind of like, what? Where'd that come from?
The rumors get going, for sure. Because there's always got to be a reason why something's not successful.
Right.
And I think that, unfortunately, we get barraged with and we thrive on that, you know, that personal part of our brain that, you know, you can't not pay attention to the negative stuff, right? It's like, it's almost like a panic, a fight or flight kind of an instinct we have. But when you look at housing, you know, I look at the positive side of it right now, and I'm looking at the fact that when you do have that move up buyer or the middle bracket too, and they're moving up, it releases the inventory in the upper bracket. And then the upper bracket, the guys are moving up from the middle bracket. And all of a sudden now we're starting to see some more single family homes for sale. But, you know, Denny, when we come back from the break here, I think one of the things we should talk about is the baby boomers and how they've changed a lot and how we're anticipating them changing our housing economy.
Got to hear that. Good. All right. Let's take this break. We'll do that. We hope you stay with us here in the Real Estate Show. We'll be back in a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to this portion of the Real Estate Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Chris and Andy here in studio, Travis around the corner. And when we, just before the break, Andy, you mentioned the phrase the baby boomers and how they may have changed the market. What's the deal
What are they anyways? baby boomers.
I don't know. My mom and dad, I guess. I don't know. It's a generation right now that is one of the larger generations, and there's the more people in that generation turning 65 every day, to the tune of 10,000 people a day, I believe, in that generation are turning 65. And so what's interesting, though, is that this there's what we're having happen, though, is that so you have these an age bracket that normally once they hit a certain age, they start thinking about like, hey, I'm going to retire or I'm going to, you know, I'm not. They become less and less of an impact on the economy. So what's interesting is that the baby boomers are not retiring. They're not selling their big houses. They're still buying new cars. They're still buying clothes. They're still buying, you know, all the things that they normally you would see in that, you know, 30 to 50 bracket. It's the 50 plus crowd that's going strong into their 70s. And what they're saying is 85% of these baby boomers have no intention of selling their large home.
How many?
85% have no intention, and they plan on staying there. And in the bigger markets, you get out to the New Yorks and the Californias where the markets are crazy on values, it's even higher stats because they can't afford to move because they can't replace what they have or it's just not affordable or cost-effective to do it. So it's just an interesting stat. And so generally that general or natural migration of people that once they get to a certain age, they sell the big two-story, they buy the Rambler or they buy the townhouse, and we're not seeing as many of those people move, and we're seeing more remodeling and people staying put and retrofitting their houses. So it'll be an interesting next couple of years as we try to figure that out. So they're putting a lot of pressure back on a new construction. And
yeah, I was out at a house that they were thinking the same thing. They have this house, a suburb house, a Rambler, on a real nice lot. But if they were to remodel it, what happens is that they're going to put $400,000 or $500,000 into it. It would have totally priced them out of the complete neighborhood. And so then their decision was, rather than remodeling, they're just going to go buy a brand new house instead. So I don't know. That seems crazy, that 85%.
Well, and that was just some general consensus from, you know, Zillow and Realtor.com and a bunch of these.
Well, they know what they're talking about.
Well, you think they do. At least they were, wherever they survey, that was the stats that they were pulling back in. So even if they're wrong by a couple percent or whatever, it's still a pretty high number of people that are thinking of staying put. And, you know, I've said it before, you know, the crowd that says, I really bought right when I bought. I like my house. I bought the right house in the right neighborhood in the right area. And now by making a few tweaks, spending, let's say, $15,000 to, you know, $30,000 can stay there for another 20 or 30 years and it's paid for. I don't know. It's kind of nice.
Well, earlier this week, I actually gave Andy a call and we started talking about my idea because I came up with it because I've been hearing over this time, I mean, these really nice luxury homes that people want to build, mm-hmm. but they want to have that extra area for the parents mm-hmm. or whatever. So I started thinking more and more, and I'm like, why couldn't we kind of develop a development that it actually was a bunch of duplexes, but they looked like totally single family homes that you mm-hmm. couldn't even tell the difference if they weren't. But then you have the flexibility of, say, you want an older child.
Adult
to stay
children,
in that.
Sure.
Yeah, that is totally separate. You have your aging parents in there. Yep. What if you just wanted to rent it out for some extra income?
Yeah.
Or you want to do it as a VRBO, you know, or it was guest quarters, you know, when they came on extended visits. Yep. I just think that creating some flexibility, and I think that's what we're talking about here, because maybe they don't want to move out of their homes, mm-hmm. you know, but they're going to need some help somehow, somewhere.
So there's been some of that done in a lighter scale, not quite as grand as what you're saying, but where it's kind of the, yeah, this is for mom and dad, the next generation homes. I think there's a few of them out there that are trying to do it. And what's interesting to me, Danny, is that a lot of these cities seem to not really be excited about it. And I don't know if it's a matter of, they don't understand how to zone it, or it doesn't conform with their traditional zoning, or if it's a matter of the, I don't want that behind
that's
my house.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And so I'd love to see, you know, if there's even some cities that are out there that would ever email our show, I'd love to talk to them about putting together a collaborative project like you're talking about, because we've got builders that would do it. We got consumers listening to the show that talk about it all the time. And multi-generational housing. It's a huge need.
And transitional. But there's so many things. And I think you don't limit it.
Yeah.
Because it's not like, hey, my parents are going to live with me. Maybe some people have, you know, an aunt from wherever that wants to use it every once in a while. Or, hey, once I start getting older, maybe I'll rent out the big side that I was in. Mm-hmm. And then I'll just keep the smaller side that we rent out. You know? And then you can kind of keep your house. Or what about transitioning into kind of an estate plan? you know, that, hey, we're going to transfer this over to our kids. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people are doing that right now. The kids and they're all their, the kid, the parents are, you know, kind of in the smaller area because they don't need it all. And they're maybe traveling and the, you know, the other ones are on the other side. So
no, I think it's a great, fantastic idea. I think that there's just a, to find a quote development that would accept and look at that as, is the challenge. And I think that there's a lot of infill lots and houses that are in the proper here in the city that would allow that to happen. No problem. But it's like the suburbs. So?
That's when the complaints come though. Yeah. You know, in the neighborhoods, and they have to say it. Hey,
well, but if I'm converting
a
triplex to a triplex, it's no big deal.
That's
I'm building something that's a little more suitable for today's market.
What are the complaints? What kind of complaints are you talking
about? If you want to try to do that, like an infill project, what Andy's saying is that there's lots within an area or a decrepit, you know, whatever house.
Yeah.
Horrible house that you want to tear down.
Well,
they usually, if it's a single family neighborhood, they want a single family. You know, one unit put in
there
rather than a duplex.
But, you know, in Minneapolis, so you'll see a lot of that where they pepper in. They'll have, like, a duplex next to a regular single-family home and whatever, and it works. And that's why I know that it could work. And I think that the development you're talking about creating could be a wonderful concept where you don't have to do it, but if you wanted to, it's available.
Right.
And so, you know, because I've always been a big fan of having income-producing properties, and especially the one you live in. I mean, you think about being a farmer and having land, and you can generate income off of your own. Same thing with a house. What's wrong with having a young family that moves into a house or, you know, let's say it's a single female. She buys the house and decides to get married, have kids, and then they turn the other side of the duplex into an extension of their house. And then when they get older, they turn it back into a rental property.
And we see now what the big craze is, and that's why duplexes have shot up so high in values. Travis Whitford's going to be with us too. But you see that as well from a duplex standpoint that people are getting into those duplexes, living on one side and renting out the other one. They're just a lot more flexible.
Oh, yeah. I've been seeing, I've been doing a lot of investment property purchases or first-time buyers that are looking to buy duplexes so they can have that rental income to help help make their mortgage payment cheaper. I mean, it's I haven't seen this much multi-unit activity in the last couple of years that I've had in the last couple months.
Totally. And I think this whole concept is like, you won't, I mean, the fear is from neighbors is that there's going to be 72 cars that are parked in there and seven swing sets out in the backyard. I mean, and that's, I mean, I'm thinking of a different concept from that. And I think that's what a lot of people are doing right now on the duplex part of it.
Well, but owner on one side, renter on the other, there's a different set of rules. It's got living with your parents. You know what I mean? It's like, they're not going to let you get away with much. It's when it's the offsite, you know, or what do they call that phrase where it's the non-resident owner that it's strictly a rental property or VRBO, it'd be different. You know what I mean? There'd be less visibility by the owner, you know, in that circumstance. So I do understand that being viewed
so I'm on to something is what you're saying.
You're a genius, Chris.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Well, on that note, let's take a bit of a break here and be right back. Stay with us. This is the Real Estate Show. We are around every Saturday here on CCO in the 10 o'clock hour. And after this break, we'll be back with more. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to this portion of the Real Estate Show around here on CCO every Saturday in the 10 o'clock hour. Chris, Andy, Travis in studio. Where do we leave off? Where do we go from here?
Well, I think we're going to hit on Travis. I know there's some new stuff. Was it Fannie Mae through the actual process and kind of quickening things up again?
So how many times have you had borrowers of yours complain to about their mortgage lender?
That's never.
You know, oh, I got to submit more pay stubs. Oh, I got to submit more bank statements. It's, you know, a never-ending process.
It's true.
Well, you know, sometime, I think it was at the end of last year, but lenders really started rolling it out earlier this year. Fannie Mae has what's called a day one certainty, where it essentially allows borrowers to be completely paperless. You might not have to submit any pay stubs, W-2s, you know, tax returns, bank statements. You might not even need an appraisal. So it's pretty cool. It's kind of
Andy, does it sound like that heartbeat loan? That if you have a heartbeat, you get a loan?
The fog, the mirror loan? Yeah. I love those. Those are actually, that
I kind
of
remember that
in
about 2004. Anyways, keep going, Travis.
Yeah, so there's like four components of it that have documentation relief. There's, you know, income, employment, assets, and appraisal. So income, the way it's set up right now, we validate people's income and employment through what's called the work number by Equifax. It used to always be called the work number. Now it's more like Equifax Services. But there's about 30% of all the employers out there participate with with this service. And we validate people's income and earnings directly through that service.
Really?
And it's tied up into the automated underwriting system. It reads it. And it accepts it, tells you what income that they say, and, you know, you're good. You don't have to submit any pay subs or nothing for that. Now, your employer has to be participating with it. If they don't, they can do a manual outreach to the employer and have somebody fill out a form, and then they kind of compute it, or they kind of generate it on a computer format that's acceptable. Also, for assets, they can opt in through a service called Account Check. And basically, they provide their username and login to their banking institution. And the majority of all the banking institutions are participating in this. So you have to be able to have online banking. That's, you know, number one. So like all the, you know, all the big banks, you know, the Wells Fargo's, the U.S. banks, you know, they're all participating in it. And you just give them. You just provide your username and access, and it allows the lender to basically get 60-day transaction histories of your stuff, and it analyzes deposits, it analyzes, you know, balances, and it lets you know if you need to validate anything or confirm a large deposit or not. And the other step is appraisal. If this day and age, like every single appraisal that's done out there gets put into a collateral underwriting database, more or less, and every single appraisal and comp is being analyzed by a computer. And when you run a loan through the automated underwriting system, and there's enough data in that neighborhood and that property, and it likes the value, you don't even have to get an appraisal anymore. So, you know, it saves out. Think of the time, you know.
Well, you're not kidding.
You know.
Yeah. And the frustration, because I was joking, obviously, but you do get that a lot and say, oh, geez, it lasts a little too long. We need all new bank statements again.
Yeah, you know? Mean, like,
you guys aren't doing that to be mean. I mean, that's what they're requiring.
Right, yeah, there's a shelf life with pay stubs and bank statements. They can't be sold. Somebody, you know, pre-approves or gets qualified, you know, 3 months ago or something like that. I mean, and we have pay stubs, bank statements from three. We need new ones. Now with this, I mean, the computer, you know, as long there's an expiration day. I think it's 120 days for the income piece. The bank statements, we get allowed a 90-day window to constantly refresh those bank statements. So it's just, you know, it's slick, you know. I know a lot of times people get, you know, they're like, wow, you know, yeah, freaked out about applying their username and passwords to, you know, this account check place for the assets. But kind of think about it. I mean, these banks have opted into working with them.
Right.
So you think they went through pretty rigorous security tests to make sure that, you know, be safe? And I mean, you know, how safe is emailing me a bank statement? I mean, if you don't delete it out of your sent item, you know, if somebody's in your email, you can find all that stuff, you know. So
this is a brand new process. Is that, I mean, is this for FHA or conventional, or VA? Or?
It's just only for conventional financing right now through Fannie Mae's underwriting systems. So the two main underwriting systems are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, it's only a matter of time. You know, we have a feeling that next year, two, three, you know, FHA is probably going to adapt to this. You know, Freddie Mac, I'm sure, is going to be adopting to this here pretty soon. But, yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. Borrowers, I think, are going to be extremely happy with it, not having to, you know, supply as much information and just make the whole loan process, like, so easy and simple, you know. And I'm really excited. And, you know, it's not going to work for every borrower, depending on how they get paid, how long they've been at the job. But there's a lot of borrowers that are going to be able to take advantage of this and be like, really? I just got a mortgage. That's all I did. Sweet.
Yeah, no, that's neat. I'll tell you that Andy and I were talking, we were actually coming to the show together, and we were talking about all these abbreviations and stuff that we use and, you know, CMAs. And I mean, now I'm hearing him talk and, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And I think it is kind of interesting. I think maybe sometime we should do a show kind of on what all these things actually are, because I think people get wrapped up in, you know, in what the heck's a Fannie and Freddie.
Well, a perfect example is that I was shadowing one of our newer agents on the team, and they were talking at an open house, and I stopped the person, of course, not to embarrass him, but I looked at the customer that was walking in, and I said, I said, do you understand what the agent just said? They go, not really. And I said, sometimes we need to stop and understand that we're trying to help you figure out what your house is worth. We want to help you figure out, you know, what's the maximum way to get the most amount of money out of that house for you and give you the time that's appropriate for you to prepare or decide that you don't want to prepare. And, you know, that's really our job. Our fiduciary responsibilities as agents is, you know, the loyalty, obedience, disclosure, confidentiality, reasonable care, and accounting. And beyond that, it's just a good old sense of we need to take care of our customers, and that when somebody asks us what a house is worth, we need to tell them what it's worth or what they can do to maximize their returns. And I think that that's, you know, I always go to picking on the way that the advertising is being done now. But you look at the way social media and some of the ways that they can sell houses, and we'll buy your house and we guarantee and all this other stuff. What I'm really concerned with in those propositions is their fiduciary responsibilities to the consumer. You know, when they say things, you know, like they benefit this or you benefit that. And I always say the disclosure should come with an ad that runs with a claim like that. First of all, they should say, how many of those houses are sold on that program within your sales per year? So if you don't do a guaranteed program more than 25% of the time, you shouldn't be able to talk about it. Or if we'll make you a guarantee, or we'll make you an offer, or we'll make you a whatever, there's lots of these companies that are coming. And what's the reality is this: they're offering you wholesale so that they can make a profit on you. So when they say they're
to
not
make a profit.
Well, but I know that. But when you lead off with saying programs that don't benefit the realtor, they benefit the consumer, or some of those other ones that are out there, it really upsets me, because it obviously benefits the person that runs a commercial. First of all, they have to pay for the ad, they have to pay for those commercials, they have to pay for the whatever. And I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but I'm just saying that the consumer sees this stuff and they get confused, and it's not right. They really should. If anything else, if you listen to one of these, you know, fast pitch kind of situations, I want you to listen to somebody that's honored or a respected realtor in that market as well. Get more than one opinion. Don't just listen to the fast pitch. Listen to the traditional real estate agent too, that'll show you exactly what your house is worth and show you, hey, you're losing, or you're putting $60,000 in their pocket by taking advantage of that program, or you're leaving money on the table. And I think that's just, you know, my, I don't know.
Right. And there's,
I'm not trying to be snide. I get upset when people get taken advantage of, and this bothers me.
Yeah. But some people don't want to, I mean, there is some people out there that don't want to deal with the hassle of it either.
The convenience. You know, I get that, but it's just you're paying $8 for a Coke when you do a program like that. That's all I got to say.
All right. Tell you what, let's take a break and cool down a little bit. We'll do that, but we'll be back with more of the Real Estate Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to this portion of the Real Estate Show, around every Saturday here in the 10 o'clock hour on WCCO. Chris, Andy, Travis in the studio. Before we move on, there was I'm thinking about the folks that may have joined us a little bit late. What was that figure, that high percentage of baby boomers that are kind of staying put?
Well, you know, Denny, we were kind of trying to tackle the housing shortage and what are some of the reasons what's holding back housing, right? So the rates jumping up and new construction's going up in costs, and houses are still selling, appreciation's still happening. But the main gist of it was that a survey that they did, this was Realtor.com, they had Zillow, and they had Trulia.com, and the Census Bureau, all were doing surveys of plans, and they were just saying that the baby boomers that were surveyed, 85% of them had no intention of moving in the near future. And the problem that we see with that is it's out of those 85% of the baby boomers that didn't want to move, 78% of baby boomers own houses. That equates to 33 million properties that are going to be sitting snug in a bug and not being up for sale, which is part of that. When they talk about locking up a majority of the houses that are for sale, it's a huge number. I don't have the stats of how many houses are in the U.S., but that's a significant amount of houses that are going to be sitting still. Now, as their needs change and as they get older, and, you know, but it's just people are staying healthier longer. They're active longer. They like to live the good life. I mean, I think, you know, from what I've been told, we only go around this world once, so I
They're all going to move once I get my development together. I'm telling you, they're all.
We better quick patent that before we tell anybody about it.
You know, that kind of with Travis, is there a difference between that if I'm financing like a duplex or like a, I don't know, I guess I'd call it an accessory living area. Maybe you just had a little area that's kind of like off your garage in another door.
Yes, totally. It'd be two totally different ways of looking at the property. So. You know, duplex is duplex, triplex, fourplex, whatever you want to go with. There's different down payment requirements for those. You know, in the conventional mortgage world, you have to put, you know, 15% down on a two unit legally zoned a duplex. Now, if something just has an accessory unit, you know, that's more treated as a single family home with an accessory unit. So you would be able to find that or finance that, you know, traditionally. Now,
there's a difference because of interest rates and down payment.
Down payment, interest rates, et cetera. And, I mean, if you were buying an accessory unit and you wanted to rent out that unit, you know, you could not use rental income from that to qualify.
Okay, yep.
So could you define accessory unit? I mean, are we talking about, like, having a kitchen in the basement where mom and dad live down in the lower level, but it's completely open, there's no security to it, it's open flowing with the rest of the house? Or what are we talking about?
Yeah, one main entrance with, you know, like a mother-in-law apartment, so to say, or maybe you got like a little apartment thing above your garage or something like that. You know, there a duplex means there's two entrances.
Two addresses?
There could be two addresses, two entrances. Mm-hmm. So each unit has its own entrance.
That's a duplex to me.
Yeah. Now, single-family home with an accessory unit typically – it's one entrance.
So in Rooney Land, is that going to be the same rule, or is there going to be different
Rooney
rules?
Rooney Land's going to have two separate entrances, but they're going to finance it normally. So
are they going to have separate entryways, too, into the development?
I think we got to write our Congress.
Here's the renter's entrance, and here's the owner's entrance. And...
Well, the problem is with the city. I mean, I sold one of those, and basically my client had to almost sign in blood because they put a full kitchen in the basement that they weren't going to have anyone but their mother-in-law in there, and that they wouldn't rent it out.
Well, back in the day, there were several cities that I would list the bank-owned properties for, or not for the cities, but for the banks, and we'd have the city inspections, and they'd say, remove the kitchen. They wanted those kitchens removed in the basements. They don't even want the illusion that you could have another family living in the basement. So,
and there's so many. I mean, in reality, out there, there's so many people that are doing that, renting out their lower level when it's not a duplex. I mean, there's a ton of people that are doing that, that have outfitted their basements like that, and...
But I just think the world's changing. I mean, like the model home that I sent in up in Blaine, where we actually have main floor living and a loft with two full-size bedrooms with walk-in closets and a full-size bathroom, strictly designed for that, you know, move home adult, or maybe you have like the daughter with the, you know, the child, or the son with the child, or whatever, or maybe they're just waiting for their new house to be ready, or they're finishing college, whatever it is. There's so many cool opportunities, I think, to use a product like that.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying that there's options. And it's not just for your parents coming to live with you.
Right.
There's so many different things that people have. And, you know, and in today's world, too, I mean, it's kind of a jet-setting world and people are off. And
yeah.
I don't know if you can combine costs. And, you know, I think a lot of people, these baby boomers, mm-hmm. usually their biggest problem is maintaining things. And keeping stuff in play. Well, what happens if you put in almost a caretaker in that area?
Yeah.
And they were able to take care of everything. You stay in their house.
That's a fantastic point. I think a lot of people also that are in that baby boomer, they're not selling because they don't know where they're going to go. They don't know what they want. They don't want to succumb to the, I have to have everything taken care of for me, but if I want to have a garden, I want to have a garden. And so in Andy Land, we're actually going to have caretakers. And in Rooneyville, they'll...
with separate entrances.
We should have our own towns. That'd be kind of fun.
We're going to take applications. So, Denny, if you get applications,
where would you live, Denny?
Anyland
or Rooneyville?
I would split my time.
We have separate entrances.
He'd have a condo right on the border. Pay taxes in both.
And I'd put up guards.
Yeah. Keep those guys away.
We have to go. How do we get in touch with every one of you guys?
ChrisRooney.com is the best way to go.
TravisMNLoans.com.
Andy@Prasky.com.
All right, very good. Thanks, guys. Good to see you again. We'll be back again next week. Hope you join us for more real estate here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.